This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times? You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy Bobo-pedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
This is WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
Into the 11 o'clock hour here on WEEI. Dan Ball, John Lyons with you. Happy Saturday. Hopefully you're enjoying the beginning of your new year and the very end of the holiday season. Seems like real life kind of hits again for everybody on Monday. Are you back to school on Monday morning?
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be quite the... Quite the smack in the face. But in the meantime, it's been fun to be with everybody during the holiday season with a lot going on. And we talked off the top of our Patriots conversation, John, obviously about the very, very serious headlines in allegations and charges that came out involving Stephon Diggs and Christian Barmore earlier this week. But that headline coming out on Tuesday disrupted what was going to be the conversation of the day, I thought, here on this station on Tuesday, which was the performance of Matthew Stafford on Monday Night Football and the drastically changing odds for Drake May, as now the odds on favorite to be the NFL's MVP. Opened up at plus 130 at the beginning of Monday Night Football. As of, I think it was yesterday morning, he was at minus 295 to win the award. Now both quarterbacks having played 16 games, Drake May 13 wins to Stafford's 11. The passing yards, still an advantage for Stafford after that effort, 4,448 versus 4,203. The touchdowns, 42 to 30, but the interceptions now even at 8. Then when you tack on the rushing stats for Drake, 409 yards and 4 touchdowns compared to -2 for Matthew Stafford. The counting stats are one thing. People were then arguing the schedule and how they've performed against like opponents. There are so many different angles to compare these two quarterbacks as seemingly the two standalone front runners to be the MVP. What is the metric, the number, the stat, the bit of information that's jumped out the most to you when you try to compare these two guys to see who deserves it more?
So the biggest thing that I've tried to use to compare them is the supporting cast and where they started from, right? Because you go back to last season, Drake May was on a team that fired its head coach, fired its offensive coordinator, won 4 games. Stafford was on a team that almost beat the Eagles in Philly in the divisional round. I mean, that was the Eagles' toughest playoff game, was that divisional round. Then the offseason, May gets a new coach, new OC, bunch of new guys around him. Stafford has the injury, misses most of training camp, overcomes that, credit to him. But you look at where May has brought the Patriots compared to where Stafford has brought the Rams. I think Stafford, again, Puka Nacua, one of the best receivers in the league. Davante Adams, who's been out 3 weeks, still leads the NFL in touchdown catches.
Yeah.
Kyren Williams, really good player. Rams offensive line, top 5 in the NFL. Sean McVay. I think Sean McVay and then the Mike Vrabel-McDaniels combo is almost equal coaching-wise, but Stafford and McVay have worked together since 2021, won a Super Bowl together. So that's an advantage. So I look more at that because, to me, what will get Stafford the MVP And look, he's played phenomenal this year. I'm not taking that away from him. It's the raw numbers, though, like the 42 touchdowns, right, and the yards and all like those. What I want to know from the national perspective, Dan, what's the line of demarcation with Stafford's numbers? Like, if he throws for 45 touchdowns, is it, boom, he's the MVP, that's what people are going to vote for? But if he's under 45, then do the voters take in all the things I'm talking about with the supporting cast and May's growth in year two and give him the votes for MVP? Do voters look at Christian McCaffrey and say, hey, that's a team that had Mac Jones for eight games and they might get the one seed. We're going to give him some votes, which will take away some points in the voting system from a May or from a Stafford.
Yeah.
That's my biggest question. What's the line of demarcation in Stafford's overall raw numbers? Like, if he's at 43 touchdowns, do then the voters slide to May? But if he gets to 46 after Sunday, do voters slide to Stafford? Like, that's the biggest question to me.
It really will come down to individual performances here in this final week. But one of the numbers or the metrics that was floating around that I thought was interesting, that's kind of a tweak on the schedule argument, because so many people, Dan Orlovsky included, who went semi-viral on Pat McAfee's show on Tuesday, saying, you know, he's voting for Matthew Stafford because of how he's performed against teams with 11 or more wins. That was his line of demarcation that he ended up giving it to Stafford. Now, I would also posit and say, specific to Dan, that Orlovsky was Stafford's backup quarterback in his final year in the league, so there was a previous relationship there. Six games amongst common opponents, yep. Carolina, New Orleans, Tennessee, Tampa, Baltimore, Atlanta. Drake May has a 6-0 record, 1,495 passing yards, 13 touchdowns, 3 picks, 259 rushing yards, and a touchdown. Matthew Stafford, 4-2 record, 1,544 yards, 14 touchdowns, 6 picks. So that's more yards, more touchdowns, more picks, and a worse record amongst those same six teams. It is hard to compare, but when you have those similar opponents, you at least know, all right, so this is what this guy is doing against similar defenses, so maybe that's a way to compare it. I also look at it this way. Take each quarterback and flip them. Put Drake May on the Los Angeles Rams for a moment. Have the Rams lost more than two games this season, maybe three, versus put an aging Stafford in the middle of the hodgepodge offense that the Patriots put together with that first-time play caller between the two of them, with McDaniels and Stafford, and what does that result look like? I think that's an interesting thought exercise that gives a pretty good compliment to what Drake May is pulling out of this offense.
Puka Nacua is better than anyone on the Patriots offense.
And Devontae Adams maybe as well.
Maybe as well. And then that offense, like I mentioned earlier in the show, Patriots, four out of their offensive line starters are new from a year ago. Like, Alaric Jackson on the Rams, Dotson, those are really good offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And it's been a really good offensive line. So I think, again, if you look at the numbers, like, May has a better completion percentage, better yards per attempt. I think you're going to throw in the rushing yards as well and the rushing touchdowns. Where Stafford has the advantage is he's got the track record behind him, but he also has the touchdown numbers, which are gaudy. He's got more yards. So I look at the national voters, and unfortunately, I think the national voters are going to give Stafford a lot of credit for those numbers and for how good the Rams have been. And he deserves credit, but I think they're going to give him more credit than they give May, because I think a lot of national voters are going to look at the Patriots and going to say, Mike Vrabel's a huge part of this. Josh McDaniels is a huge part of this. Will Campbell being good for most of the year is a huge part of this. Stephon Diggs, obviously this week notwithstanding, was a huge part of this year. I think that's what voters are going to look at. So, like, I think May should win the MVP. I think Stafford will, because I think voters are going to look at that stuff.
And that's a shame, because if you're saying that while also not saying how big of an impact that Sean McVay has on all of this, then you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, and I think that's a bad way to look at it. And if there's any hint or whiff of, well, we give it to the veteran, it's a lifetime achievement award, you've been around, you've done a lot, you've played varying forms of good or bad football, you went through a lot with Detroit, then you go to LA, you finally get the chance to win, so we're recognizing you for that, I wouldn't put it past a voter to include that.
Oh, I think multiple voters will.
And I think that's incredibly unfair to the process that we're examining here, which is only supposed to be, and you emphasize that, only supposed to be the guy that means the most to your team. And there is not another player in football that means more to their team this season than Drake May means to the New England Patriots. Full stop, end of story, and I will not budge off of that.
And that's it. The MVP isn't always necessarily the purely best player, because I think a lot of people out there tell you Josh Allen's still the best quarterback in the NFL.
Sure.
There are people that might say Stafford's a better player, but when you look at value, I think what you're saying, it's a great point. Like, who's been more valuable? Like, Myles Garrett might set the sack record this year. An amazing accomplishment, Hall of Fame player. Browns still suck.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, McCaffrey, I think you can make an argument for, because, again, 8 games with Mac Jones, Bosa gets hurt, Fred Warner gets hurt, and they might get the one seed if they win tonight. So,
true. Yeah.
I think McCaffrey has a real argument for that as well. It's tough, because I don't want to take away too much from Stafford, because he has had such a great year, but I think the value argument is there for May. And it's funny, because it's an all-season award, but it really might come down to these last 2 weeks. Like,
yeah.
Stafford threw 3 picks on Monday night. If he had gone out and thrown 4 touchdowns and
no picks,
we're
not talking about this.
We're probably not.
Yeah.
And this Sunday, if May goes out against Miami and throws 4 touchdowns and Stafford has a 2-touchdown, 2-interception game, then maybe we're saying, oh, yeah, now the numbers are close enough where May can win it. But if Stafford goes out and let's say he throws 4 touchdown passes, well, 46 touchdowns is 46. Like, honestly, can you think of a guy that's thrown 45 or more touchdown passes and not won the MVP?
Not off
like
the top of my head.
Like Brady in 07, Mahomes had 50. I think Peyton Manning in 2013 had 50. I think he won the MVP that year. Correct me if I'm wrong. Peterson won it in 2012. But like, to throw 45 touchdown passes and not win the MVP, that's hard to do.
It is. And I'm glad you made that point, because I'm also not trying to disparage what has been a year that's kind of been against the odds for Matthew Stafford. Just to your point, given what the preseason looked like, you weren't even sure he was going to be ready for week one.
Yeah, and he deserves credit for that.
Right, absolutely. And what, not only the fact that he's been able to operate the offense and maintain, but he's been able to thrive within all of that. They surrounded him with talent, as a good team is wont to do, but he has made more out of that than I think a lot of people thought he was going to be. This conversation just outlines to me what is wrong with the MVP conversation in every league, which it does often become the best or most talented player, because the Shohei Ohtani, Connor McDavid, Josh Allen award versus the guy that means more to what their team has accomplished this year than anybody else. I do ultimately think it's going to be Stafford. I think there's just too many items that line up in the positive column for him, for Drake May to overcome that. But I mean, John, let's call a spade a spade. The fact that we're even having conversations remotely close to this year over year, where we're going to do our year in review for the Patriots in an hour, is unfathomable to me, given that we looked at this at the beginning of the year and went, yeah, we're pretty sure he's the guy, but we don't know what this guy is actually going to be.
A year ago at this time, we were talking about the number one pick. Now we're talking about the number one seed.
Right.
And I think he's not the only reason why. I think he's the biggest reason why.
Yeah.
And I think Mike Vrabel, like, he could win coach of the year. Like, I have him third on my belt. Like, I'd go Kyle Shanahan, Liam Cohen, and then Mike Vrabel.
Sure.
But you're going to have a guy that finishes top 2 at worst in MVP voting in May, and likely top 3 in Coach of the Year voting. And if you take it where they were last year, it's really an unfathomable jump.
And you've done so much. I was poking around on the numbers to try to get an exact number on just how much roster turnover you had in the process, where the number that Pat's Pulpit put out going into camp was you had, you know, 40% of your roster returning or something like that. So the amount of changeover you've had, and yet the amount of pillars of the future that you've established, is something else that just jumps out right off the bat.
And one other thing, a 401 texter mentioned, let's not lose sight of the fact Drake had to learn a new offense. I think that I kind of alluded to that with Stafford and McVay working together for years.
Yeah.
But yeah, May, look, he's had 3 different offenses in the last 3 years, from North Carolina to last year with Van Pelt here to now McDaniels. And I thought he was bad week 1 against the Raiders. Since then, he's largely hit the ground running. Like, Steelers game, he wasn't great. Other than that, I mean, he's played an MVP level in a new offense too. So I think that's another good point as well by the texter.
And so did Stephon Diggs. So did Mac Collins. Yep. So did
you could
hit
Will
so
Campbell and Jared Wilson. Like, those guys, that's a new offense for them too.
Yeah, so did Travion Henderson. I mean, almost the entire offense had to learn a new offense together and learn each other in the process. So there was such a high chance for variability in this entire offense to start the season that has just become a non-factor, a non-issue. And even to the point where you look back at the leader in receiving yards game over game, it's Diggs, then Henry, then Booty, then Henderson.
I think Hollins, the Tampa Bay game, was number one.
Right.
Yeah.
That you go down, and it's rarely the same. I'm not sure it even has been the same game over game, and if it has, it's been two games at most. So it's every single individual stepping up and playing a role and playing a different or more or less significant role based on matchup and injury availability and all the different factors that go in, versus you could go down the same list for the Rams and it's Nakua, Nakua, Adams, that kind of thing.
And you can even make the case that one of the biggest plays of the Patriots season in the pass game was in week two against Miami, Ramondre Stevenson's 55-yard catch and run,
right,
where May avoided pressure, got the ball to him, and it's like, oh, it's a week two play. If the Patriots lose that game and they're 0-2, and then they lose to Pittsburgh and they're 0-3, I still think they would have figured it out and been a playoff team. We would not be talking about May as an MVP or them as the number one seed potentially, or at worst the two seed.
Like, right.
We would not be talking about that. So again, to your point though, that might be the single biggest passing game play they've had this year. And it was by a guy that doesn't even play receiver.
Right.
In his first year also working with May.
And the guy that's not even supposed to be the receiving back in the offense.
Exactly.
Like, he is well down the depth chart of targets, and yet he still made it work, and it's a play that changes the game and changes at least a portion of the season. So have we landed on the same conclusion that while Drake May is plenty deserving of it, it will probably be Stafford at the end of the day?
I think that's – and look, again, he's deserving.
Yeah.
I think May's more deserving, but yeah, I think it's going to end up being Stafford.
I'd be pretty disappointed in the voters if neither Vrabel nor May win an award when all is said and done. I understand the arguments for both and that both could end up losing, but I'd be pretty disappointed in the voting process if neither got one, given the turnaround that we saw this year.
And I think you won't see either of them win it, to be honest. Yeah.
It's kind of amazing, but we'll leave that one there. The odds, again, are what they are. Drake May still the odds-on favorite, and who knows? There's a lot of football left to be played here this weekend. Patriots take on the Miami Dolphins tomorrow, 4:25 kickoff. Don't forget, Football Sunday starts the day at 10, and then you got Fitzy and Hart on the Six Rings postgame show immediately following the end of the game. We're going to transition over quickly to the ice and talk about the Boston Bruins, their 2025 year in review, and their preview for 2026. We're going to do that with the help of Pete Blackburn, who joins us at 11:30. We're doing all of that and more, plus your calls after David Azar. Get you caught up on what's trending.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees.
My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab.
We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year, because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces, like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy Bobo-pedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? snag an electric fireplace, and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their Showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
We're right back to WEEI.
John Lyons, as we continue our year in review for the professional teams in Boston sports, the current day Boston Bruins sit at 21-18-2. They are sixth in an Atlantic division that is only separated by a couple of points. That is where the Bruins sit as of January 3rd, that is today, 2026. A year ago, so we'll take it to December 31st, 2024, a game against the Washington Capitals in which they lost 3-1. That started a losing streak of six games in a row and started the cascade down the standings that led to the point where you went through the beginning portion of a rebuild at the trade deadline. You traded Brandon Carlo, traded your captain Brad Marchand, traded significant pieces off of your roster, and accepted that the window to win a championship in the Marchand, Bergeron, Krejci, Chara, etc. era had closed. You went through an offseason in which you spent more money than I was expecting. You brought in head coach Marco Sturm, and you gave a number of new players the chance to make the roster and compete. You're now a couple games over 500. You're still in the mix, though you're out of a playoff spot. The year for the Boston Bruins was really the end of an era, in my estimation, more so than maybe any other team that we had in Boston sports last year.
Yeah, and just a massive disappointment as well, because you go back to the year before that, they take Florida to six games. You're like, maybe they have something here. They have that Swayman holdout in training camp. He plays terribly. Montgomery gets fired. Sacco's your interim. He ultimately gets let go. And just like anecdotally, like watching that team play, like I remember I was at the game in late February. They lost to the Anaheim Ducks in overtime. And I'm just sitting there like, wow, Anaheim, who we don't think of as a great team.
Yeah.
I'm like, Anaheim's faster than them. They're stronger than them. They're tougher than them. Like, that was really disappointing to see throughout. And it wasn't just that. I mean, think about all the games last year. 7-1 loss. 6-2 loss.
Oh, yeah. Where you might as well have just stayed on the bus.
I was at Montgomery's last game. I think it was a 5-1 loss to Columbus. Like,
yeah.
They're just getting their butts kicked left and right. And we've seen this year some weird fits and starts. Like, you had that six-game losing streak. There was that Ottawa 7-2 loss mixed in there. Then you had the, seven-game winning streak. Then Jonathan Aspero, who might be your sneaky team MVP, goes out. And you go 1-5-1 in the six games. He's out. It's like, it just feels like a team, Dan, that, and I love Morgan Geeky. Pasternak's a top five forward in the NHL. But it feels like a team that is still 2 years away from contending.
Yeah, you're fundamentally incomplete where you are right now. Where you're right, you know, you have a couple of the best scoring wingers in hockey right now. That's great.
Not hyperbole.
Yeah. The second and probably fourth, if I had to guess, where Pasternak was right now in terms of goal scoring, he's right up there. And then point scoring, it's the same deal. So you have that established. That's great. You have what I would say is one of the better second line centers in hockey, if you want to call him that, in Elias Lindholm. Good defensive player, can score you 50-60 points. Okay, that's fine. You got that. That's good. You have better prospect depth right now than you've had in a number of years, for my estimation. Both James Higgins and Will Zellers had incredible World Juniors. Fraser Minton, who you got in the Brandon Carlo trade, is becoming a really, really nice piece.
What are your better young players overall?
Absolutely.
Like, in your system top to bottom,
right?
Fraser Minton.
He jumped over Patra and Lysel and Merkulov and all those
guys. I still think
of
that pass he had the night before Thanksgiving on the Steves goal in New York. Like, oh, that was
disgusting. He's he's going to be a guy who hopefully positively impacts you for a while. And you got McAvoy, who is paid more money than maybe the role that he should play, but you still know that at his best, he is a tough SOB to play against. Then you got Jeremy Swayman, who, again, is paid to be a guy who starts 60 games and plays goal at a level that should win you a lot of games. Not necessarily Vezina winner, but at least in the conversation for one of the better goalies in hockey. And he's just simply not that. He is what he was with Linus Allmark, John, to me, I think is what he maxes out as a really good tandem goaltender, but not a standalone number one guy in this league.
And it's interesting because if you talk to a lot of hockey people, they'll say, hey, a lot of the some of the advanced numbers, like he looks good in those and they like him. But we're talking about a guy who's 33rd in goals against average, 2.84.
Yeah. 32 teams in the NHL, just adding that to the mix.
26th in save percentage.
Yeah.
So it's a guy that even if maybe some of the advanced numbers like him, it hasn't been to the level of what you need out of him. Like if they're going to be good in this year or next, he has to be a big part of it. Like, you don't have the depth across your like, again, Geeky and Pasternak, you can make a case, two of the top five wingers in the NHL. But you don't have the depth all over your roster to have a guy like Swayman underperform.
Right.
And that's what's really, I think, over the last couple of years, that has given them some problems. Because you could, I mean, is their best young player James Higgins, who's not even there? Like, yeah. I'm not even trying to be sarcastic. Like, really, is that their best young player in their system? A guy who's in college still?
Yeah, and that's like, the answer is yes. I mean, the AHL right now is a bit of a wasteland in terms of talent, unfortunately. You had guys who looked like they were going to be impact players. Patra's the prime example. Came up a couple years ago, got a decent cup of coffee in the league, scored a few points.
I was excited. His first month, I was like, oh, maybe they have a guy that's going to be a legit center here.
Yeah, looked like a guy who could be in your middle six, could be cost-controlled for a while, but he's kind of stalled out at the AHL level. Lysell just doesn't seem to have the compete level that you kind of need, not only to be a Bruin, but to be an NHLer in general. And so your wave of true good talent is still at the collegiate level. But we'll leave that conversation there in terms of our year in review for the Bruins because we're joined by Pete Blackburn of What Chaos. Pete, it is Dan Ball and John Lyons. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
We're both doing good. I appreciate the time as always. And I want to add you into our conversation here, Pete, because being that it's, you know, 3 days into the new year, we're doing a bit of a year in review for the Boston Bruins. So beginning of 2025, January 1st until where we sit now, are the Bruins in a better or a worse spot as a team?
That's a tough one to answer because I guess like if you're evaluating where they were on January 1st and kind of where it looked like it might end up, I don't think that you would put them in a place that's as competitive as they ended up in terms of January 1st this year. But ultimately, like, I still think there's a ton of questions about where this team is headed and sort of the direction and kind of where they are realistically in the bigger picture in terms of like that retool slash rebuild, whatever you want to call it, where they stand right now. So I would say, you know, the stocks have gone up slightly, but a lot of questions to still be answered.
So, Pete, I want to follow up on that because I agree with you. There's a lot of questions to be answered. And one of the biggest ones that we've had here, and we were talking about it before you came on air, is Jeremy Swayman, who is paid like a top goalie in the NHL. Bruins haven't really seen it over the last year and a half. Is this a guy that, like, he's going to be part of their future because of the contract, but do you anticipate that he's going to get to a level of that contract, or are they going to have to, I don't want to say build in spite of that contract, but almost build in spite of that contract?
No, I mean, I believe in Jeremy Swayman, and I think that you've seen, points of this season, you know, stretches of this season where he's been the guy that they want him to be. And you know, given where he's at contractually and the cap rising, like, I don't think that he's necessarily paid like a, you know, like a guy who needs to be in the Vezina rankings. He's not an Igor Shesterkin type paid goaltender. So as long as you're getting good to, you know, very good to great goaltending, like, you're very happy with where Jeremy Swayman is. And I think that fits into, you know, sort of the structure that you're establishing for your team. So, like, I don't consider him to be any sort of albatross or, you know, a hamstring for this team moving forward. It's just that he needs to be the guy that he's been more consistently in terms of hit the ceiling and where he hangs out at and be a little bit more consistent. But I also think part of that too is if you have a guy who's your B option, who is a little bit steadier than Jonas Korpisalo, I think that helps Jeremy Swayman too. We saw that with Linus Ullmark. So more than, you know, needing to reassess where you are with Swayman, I think you need to reassess where you are with your backup goaltender to kind of rise the level that you get from Swayman. You don't have to kind of burn him out.
Could that be something, Pete, that we see addressed during the course of this season, maybe by the trade deadline, given that it seems like you may have some viable options behind him in Providence right now?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And part of that, too, is, you know, you've got options behind him in Providence. But also, if there's a team that's out there in a buyer's market, like goaltending and goaltending insurance is always pretty coveted, you know, especially at the trade deadline, if you can get it. So, you know, I don't know what Jonas Korpisalo's value is at this point, but I certainly think that it's something that they're going to explore.
Pete, Jonathan Aspero has been arguably one of their most valuable players this year. They were 1-5-1 without him, giving up 4 goals per game while he was out. And I know they have McAvoy there. They have Hampus Lindholm. But is Aspero at 26 years old, like, is this a guy that you could see fitting into their long-term plans? Or is this a guy that I'm just excited about right now watching him play and it's not going to be a long-term thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but I do like ask that question because, you know, he's 26 years old and he has been like really, really solid. I think that there's, with a player like Jonathan Aspero, like there is some tendency to get overexcited about your own guy and sort of the, you know, surprising returns that you've got from him. Like, I think that Aspero's ceiling is sort of limited in terms of being a, you know, a third pair guy, you know, in between or between second and third pair. So like, I wouldn't overcommit to those guys. And I know the Bruins have had some, you know, they've run into some problems really kind of overcommitting to depth defensemen or replacement level defensemen and replacement level players throughout their lineup where they just kind of get in love with their own guys. So I think that situation is fluid, but right now you're really, really happy with what you've gotten from a guy that not a lot of us had heard of heading into this season.
That's fair.
Even
the hockey nerds in the world were like, who the hell is this? But Pete Blackburn, we know who he is. He's joining us here on WEEI of the What Chaos Show. Pete, before we continue on the Bruins line of questioning, big year in 2026 coming up for What Chaos. What's the new year look like for you guys?
I'm heading to Minnesota tomorrow for the World Juniors. The United States knocked out before I even get there, which is a tough break for me, but I'm still excited to kind of check out some of the young guys and see what this incoming draft class and some of the prospects have to offer. I will say, like, on the Bruins front, James Hagans and Will Zellers were the United States' two best players at World Juniors this year on a pretty disappointing team. So that makes you feel pretty good about where the Bruins are headed, because it's been a while since, you know, there are legitimately prospects that you can get excited about, and the Bruins need them right now. So if they hit on Hagans and Zellers, like, this lineup could look very different a year from now. So that's exciting. And then for What Chaos, we're, you know, we'll be making a few trips. I think we were going to head down to Stadium Series for that Bruins Lightning game. And then, of course, the Olympics will be huge, and then the playoffs after that. So big things ahead and exciting stuff.
Pete, you kind of led me into my next question, which is about Hagans and Zellers and some of these young guys, because I keep going back to the last time the Bruins were one of, I think, the truly elite contenders in the NHL, that 2011 through 2014 run where they went to two cups, won one. They had a bunch of guys in their early to mid-20s that were major contributors on those teams. Beyond Hagans, beyond Zellers, do you see any other guys that you think could kind of rise to that level of being big contributors on a team that can go deep in the playoffs that maybe fans should be excited about over the next year or two?
Yeah, I mean, I don't pay that super close attention to the prospect pool, but I do know that, like, Dean Letourneau has been tearing it up in terms of his goal scoring this year at BC. And I say tearing it up relative to what he gave you last year, which was next to nothing. But he was probably arrived to the Eagles a year too early. And when you've got a big guy like that whose comparisons are, you know, whether it's lazy, just kind of size comparisons, but like when he was drafted, people were saying, like, this could be Tage Thompson or somebody in the Tage Thompson realm in terms of that impact and that presence and that goal scoring ability. So to see it come through a little bit this year is really exciting. And again, like, they need to hit on some of those young guys, and Hagans and Zellers are projecting pretty well. But, you know, in order to compete in this league, given the hard cap and sort of the roster construction dynamics, you need to draft well, and you need to identify players in your system that you can plug in at low cost, at least for a handful of years. And so to see some of those guys progressing pretty well, it's something that they need right now.
Pete, given the truncated schedule because of the Olympics, you see teams across the league already making major decisions on their roster. Quinn Hughes' move, the move with Edmonton and Tristan Jarry and all that. So teams are starting to decide, are they buyers or are they sellers? Given where the Bruins are in their roster churn, do you recommend that they buy or they sell at this year's trade deadline?
Well, it depends what you mean by buy, because I certainly wouldn't rent for the sake of this season. But if you can go out and you can identify roster players that you think have a future with your lineup beyond this season, like, this is a good time to do that, because people always, you know, they think like you can only build your team through off season, whether it's drafting or trading or free agency. And it's just not true. Like, there's no wrong time to identify a player that can fit into your team. You know, I look at even, you know, Merritt Hutsnedinov, who they, you know, they swung that deal for at the deadline last year. Like, he's a guy who has proven that he deserves a place in this team's future. Frazier Minton as well. Like, there are a number of guys that you don't necessarily have to sell, like young pieces or draft picks, but like, reposition your roster even. And I know there's been a lot of smoke around Kiefer Sherwood and the Bruins' interest in him. And I think that he's a guy who could be a middle six fixture for that team for years to come. And he definitely fits the profile of the way that the Bruins want to play. It just depends on what that's going to cost and whether or not you can be the team that swings the deal for him.
Pete, I'm curious as to your assessment of Marco Sturm. He's now 41 games, a.k.a. halfway through his first season as Bruins head coach.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd asked me a month ago, I would have had nothing but great things to say, extremely high marks. Like, I really, really loved the buy-in top to bottom under Marco Sturm. I really liked kind of the structure that he's establishing with his team in terms of responsibility and contributions up and down the lineup. And they just play hard. But I think that over the past month, you've seen some warts start to show. And, you know, that's going to happen with a first-year head coach and, you know, with a team that is lacking in talent, I would say. So, like, this team doesn't have a lot of room for error, but there's been some moments with Marco Sturm in terms of his lineup management, his goaltender management, and then I keep thinking back to the game. I forget who it was against, but I think maybe Ottawa, where he had those couple of challenges that just completely undid that team, where one was a lack of a challenge and then a really poor challenge in the third period that basically lost them a game. So there have been some not so hot moments for Marco Sturm over the past month, but I would say overall trending that he was a good choice to lead this team.
Pete, before we let you go, with the Olympics coming up, any thoughts on the rosters that were just released, including snubs that jumped out to you, and where are you leaning for the gold medal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Jason Robertson and Cole Caulfield were the two big ones that in terms of snubs that I would have liked to see make the team, at least one of them, because Jason Robertson, no American player, has scored more goals or had more points than him over the past year. And so for him to not make the team makes me wonder, you know, what else could he have done, or why, what was there that made you not want to bring that guy? And especially when you identify a guy like Vincent Trocheck, who, you know, is, you know, more of a role player, kind of a face-off PK specialist. And I don't love taking guys like that for an Olympic team during a short tournament. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think the roster is really good. And they showed at Four Nations that a roster that looks very similar to that can hang with Canada. They finished one goal short, so I definitely think that they can win this tournament. It's just, you know, I think Bill Guerin has kind of put himself in a firing spot here, or a hot seat, when it comes to the bottom of the roster decisions and going with kind of role player veteran types instead of the skill guys.
He is Pete Blackburn. You can subscribe to the What Chaos Show on YouTube. You can also download it wherever you get your podcast. Also, bonus Friday episodes and the newsletter and more coming up on their Patreon. So make sure you subscribe to that as a big year is upcoming for the show. Pete, always a pleasure to catch up with you, my friend. Enjoy the next stretch of games for the Bruins and the Olympics, and we'll do it again soon.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
That's Pete Blackburn joining us here on WEEI, helping us with the conversation that, John, I think is a little bit of a fluid one. Are the Bruins in a better spot right now in 2026 than 2025? He said the trend or the stocks are on their way up, but it's hard to unequivocally say, yes, they're in a better spot year over year. And I think that's where a lot of Bruins fans find themselves right now.
Yeah, it's almost, excuse me, ask me on what day,
yeah,
right? Like where they're at. Because in that six-game losing streak, you're like, oh, they're in a worse spot. Then they have the winning streak. You're like, oh, they're in a better spot. Then they go 1-5-1, and you're like, oh, maybe they're in a worse spot. So, again, I just think this is a team that 2 years away from being a contender. And I think the trouble is you have to wonder, is Don Sweeney the guy to put it all together?
Right.
Like, there's been good trade deadline moves by Sweeney. There's been some good NHL trades, but then there's been some hit-or-miss signings. There's been good drafting last year, but then there's been some hit-or-miss drafting before. Like, that's another one of those front office dilemmas for 2026.
And the fact that he was given the chance to kind of be the architect of the debuild of the roster makes me think, oh, they kind of trust him and trust Cam Neely to see this thing through, at least partially. So we'll see where that one goes. But in the meantime, you can follow Pete at Pete Blackburn on Twitter and across all socials, and make sure you follow at What Chaos Show as well. We'll continue our conversation up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI, Dan Ball, John Lyons with you at 617-779-7937. If you missed our conversation with either Pete Blackburn or Joe Weil from earlier on in our show, you can check that out either on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search WEEI Weekend Shows. That's where you can find it in the rest of our program today. So, John, we've done the year in review and kind of year preview for three of the four teams in Boston sports. We have the Patriots left. We'll do that in the 12 o'clock hour. Of the four teams in Boston sports, Patriots in 2026, Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox also in 2026. Give me your ranking 1 through 4 of the likelihood of a Boston team winning a championship this year.
Celtics, Patriots, Red Sox, and distant fourth Bruins. Sorry to say. And I say
Celtics
the Celtics. I do, because my thing with the Patriots and winning a Super Bowl, and I would love to see that happen as I sit here with like my Patriots sweatshirt on. But
yeah, and hat.
Yeah. They have so many young guys and so many new guys. And as we've seen, you can have a bad 5 minutes in the NFL playoffs and your season could be over. Like Drake May has had 1.5 bad games this year, like the Raiders game and half the Steelers game. and I guess the first quarter against Cincinnati too. What if he has a bad game? Like, it's, he might win the MVP, could still have a bad game.
Yeah.
What if Travion Henderson, God forbid, has a key fumble? You know, what if Craig Woodson gets beat over the top for the first time all year in a playoff? And that's why we've talked about this a little bit before, where I compare them so much to the 2010-2011 Patriots, because there's so many young guys, so many new guys. And a lot of those guys on the 2010-2011 team won a Super Bowl together, but it wasn't until 2014. It took them a few years to kind of get going. They obviously made some additions with Revis and Browner, helped put them over the top. Whereas the Celtics, I look at it as right now, they're a top three team in the East, top six or top maybe eight team in the NBA. They're going to add a top five player at some point this year. Maybe they'll do something else at the deadline to augment it. So I think they should be in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then who knows from there, the West is good. I think multiple teams in the West are better than them. But I just think the Celtics can have a bad game or a bad 5 minutes and still get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I worry about, do the Patriots have one bad game, one bad 5 or 10 minutes, and that ends their season.
And, you know, the Patriots did well this offseason in bringing in veteran talent,
yep,
especially on defense, on the defensive side of the football. They brought in guys on all levels that have played impact games. They still only have, you can count on one hand the amount of guys that have played in and won Super Bowls. You know, Carlton Davis is a guy.
Milton Williams.
They had, I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but they had somebody who was a depth player on the Chiefs that is one, for example, that was kind of rotating in and out of their roster in the practice squad. But again, you only have a few guys that have been there. And I think that this coaching staff for the Patriots has done a tremendous job at getting this team up to speed and getting them to be a contender in the regular season faster than anybody thought was possible. But you cannot teach the pressure of a playoff game to a bunch of guys who haven't been there. That's just something that you need to see them deal with and either thrive and get through it, or do what most rookies or second-year players do, which is kind of take a step back from when you're just playing a mid-November regular season game. So that's an element of the Patriots that I just don't think you can game plan around. You can't coach out of them. You just have to put them through it and see if they come out of the other side.
And even some of the guys that we look at on this team as veterans.
Yeah.
Like Marcus Jones has never made the playoffs.
Right.
Christian Gonzalez has been an all-pro. He's never played in the playoffs. Kayshawn Booty, DeMario Douglas. Like, these are guys that have been here 3 or 4 years. They've never made the playoffs. Hunter Henry made the playoffs in 2021 with Mac Jones, hasn't been back there. So it's like Ramondre Stevenson in his whole career has made the playoffs once, 2021. So even these guys that we look at as vets that have been here on this team, they either haven't made the playoffs or they haven't gone deep in the playoffs together. And again, it's not saying they can't win. Like, there's a lot of guys you could say that about on the Jaguars or on the Texans or on the Broncos. Like, you can say that. You just don't know how it's going to be. Whereas if and when Tatum comes back, then you're going to have Tatum, Brown, White, and Pritchard,
yeah,
who have all won a championship together
right
here in Boston.
Right.
And that's where, again, you ask me who's closer, I say the Celtics. It's by a hair. And who knows? If in the next week the Red Sox bring back Bregman and they add somebody else, they could leapfrog to number one as well. I mean, you go back to last year, the Blue Jays go to Game 7 of the World Series. I don't think there was a huge gap between the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. Like, the Blue Jays finished 5 games ahead of them, I know, but the Red Sox took 2 out of 3 late in the season.
Yeah.
I think if they had beaten the Yankees, Blue Jays probably still would have beat them in the ALDS. But
they would have given them a better fight.
I think it would have been a close series.
No doubt.
Maybe 4 or 5 game series in the ALDS with multiple close games. So, again, if they really add, maybe they jump up that list, where, and the Bruins are just, sorry to say, distant fourth.
And they've accepted, the Bruins have accepted their fate, which is fine. So this can be a 3-team race. I, for the record, don't think that it's going to happen. I think we go a year without seeing a championship for any
of
the four.
And that probably is the most likely. If we're being honest,
yeah,
that's probably the most likely. You might have 2 teams get close.
Yeah.
I think that's the most likely outcome, though.
You could see, and I would be, by the way, given the tumult on the Celtics roster and the fact that we're just right at the beginning of everything with the Patriots, if we come out of this saying Celtics make the Eastern Conference Finals and the Patriots make the AFC Championship game or something like that, but both lose, I'd go, that's a great year. I go, that's a great year, given what I think we thought the expectations were going to be. You'd love to see one of them get through and win, but I still think that demarcates a successful season for the Patriots. It already has been, in my mind, and a really successful turnaround from some pretty significant odds against them for the Boston Celtics.
And you would feel like in both cases you're kind of at the beginning of something, where the Patriots you'd feel like you're at the true beginning of a long run. The Celtics, you'd feel like you'd be at the beginning of the second wave of the Tatum-Brown era. Because
right.
then they would add to that. It wouldn't be like, oh no, they didn't win and it's over. You'd feel like, hey, you're even the Red Sox. Like, if they go deep in the playoffs, you'd feel like, all right, Bregman's older, but a lot of their other guys are young or in their prime. And
yeah.
you're kind of moving in the beginning of something. So, yeah, that's another piece, too. Like, if the Patriots lose in the AFC Championship game, sure, I'll be disappointed. But I'll sit there and say, wow, they won four games last year. They made the AFC Championship game with a guy who's in his first year coaching here, a guy who's in his second year playing in the NFL at quarterback, and a lot of other young guys and new guys to build around.
And in the case of the Celtics, they're also ahead of the curve, where the Knicks are going to have to make decisions on their roster yeah. to get back under the apron, and teams are going to be behind them in the Western Conference as well. So while I don't see it happening, I thought I was going to be the one with the hot take saying the Celtics had the best odds, because I'm right there with you. I would have had the same.
Yeah, and it's close, like, to be fair,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I just worry, like, the Patriots' youth, if they go on the road in an AFC championship game in Denver, and I know they're undefeated on the road this year, but, like, that's a different animal.
Right. There is nothing keeping Drake May and or Ramondre yeah. Stevenson from putting the ball on the ground in a bad time, and then all of a sudden you're behind the eight ball. But we'll leave that one there, because before the Patriots get to a playoff game, the AFC championship game and all that, they wrap up the regular season against the Miami Dolphins at Gillette tomorrow amid a week that had a lot around it off the field. We'll discuss the elements involved in the Week 18 game for the Pats next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year, because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces, like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy bobopedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their Showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no, so my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now, I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall, so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.